Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with an analysis of what is in the so-called fiscal cliff deal with Robert Kuttner, the co-founder and co-editor of the American Prospect, where he has a new article, The Endless Cliff. We will discuss the manufactured and self-inflicted phony crisis we just got through and the next crisis looming over the debt ceiling where, in spite of the president's warning, the wrecking crew in Congress could do some serious damage. Then we'll look into how long the world's only superpower can continue to be the global hegemon when it has such a broken and dysfunctional government. David Rothkopf, the CEO and editor-at-large of Foreign Policy magazine, joins us to discuss his article at CNN, Cliff Deal Hollow Victory for the American People, and the end-of-the-year farce on Capitol Hill that produced such a paltry deal instead of a grand bargain. Then finally, on the one-year anniversary of the U.S. exit from Iraq, we will look into growing rebellion in the Sunni Anbar province and the threats by al-Maliki, Iraq's Shiite leader, to use force to put it down. Robert Dreyfus, an investigative journalist who has written extensively on Iraq and is the author of Devil's Game, How the United States Helped Unleash Fundamentalist Islam, joins us. We will discuss how the winner of the Iraq war, Iran, is now losing in Syria, and that defeat could embolden Iraq's restive Sunni population, who are already chafing under al-Maliki's heavy-handed rule. Joining us now is Robert Kuttner, who is co-founder and co-editor of the American Prospect. He was formerly an assistant to the legendary I.F. Stone, a chief investigator for the Senate Banking Committee, and for 20 years wrote a column for Business Week. Robert Kuttner is the author of 8 books, including his latest, A Presidency in Peril, The Insider Story of Obama's Promise, Wall Street's Power, and the Struggle to Control Our Economic Future. He has a recent article at the Huffington Post, The Zombie Party, and a new article at the American Prospect, The Endless Cliff. Welcome to Background Briefing, Robert Kuttner.
Always a pleasure.
And we have on the progressive side, on the left, a lot of complaints, some of them getting to be sort of ritualistic about Obama caving in unnecessarily. You've got the Nobel economist and New York columnist Paul Krugman talking about Obama being a wimp. But on the other side, you've got some quite shrill Republican voices screaming at the sellout by the Republicans, and people like Charles Krauthammer saying that the Republicans got routed by Obama. Where do you come down on this?
Well, I think you have to divide this into the damage that Obama did in the 2 years prior to this negotiation by really enabling the deficit hysteria, and then the more narrow tactical question of how well he played these negotiations. So let me address both. I think he did a huge amount of damage by pivoting to deficit reduction prematurely, beginning in his 2010 State of the Union address when he appointed the Bowles-Simpson Commission and basically bought the whole story that the way to get economic recovery was to reduce the deficit and reduce the national debt. That's just crazy economics. I mean, when you have a deflated economy, the last thing you want to do is reduce the deficit. You want to get the deficit down over time by getting economic growth back up. And by doing that, he emboldened both the right and the kind of center-right represented by the Pete Peterson corporate fix-the-debt crowd, and he weakened his own bargaining hand. Then, as you head into the election, and he realizes that he's got a winning hand because the so-called fiscal cliff is about to backfire on the Republicans. Part of the so-called fiscal cliff is the fact that the Bush tax cuts expire for everybody. And all he has to do is say to the Republicans, look, guys, I am willing to keep those tax cuts from expiring on the bottom 98%, but I want to raise them on the top 2%. What are you going to do? That jams the Republicans. He also, I think, made a mistake as recently as 2 weeks ago in kind of saying that he was willing to put Social Security into the pot to the extent, at least, of altering the cost of living formula, the so-called chain consumer price index, which was just a backdoor cut in Social Security. He finally backed off that. So, you know, for about a week, he's been playing the kind of hardball that he hasn't played in the past. He took Social Security off the table. He backed away from the whole idea of a grand bargain, and he said to the Republicans, all we're going to do in this deal is we're going to raise taxes on the top 2%, and we're going to put off the sequester, and we're going to put off the threat of not extending the debt ceiling. How did he do? we did pretty well. He kept any budget cuts out of this deal. He had to cave in to some extent on where he drew the line on who would get a tax increase. It went up from 250,000 income to 450,000. That was a cave-in. He did keep Social Security out of the deal, and he did not get in return any kind of a commitment on the debt ceiling, and he was forced to settle for a very short-term delay in the $120 billion sequester of just 60 days. Now, he did say when he came into the briefing room last night after the House passed the deal that he simply was not willing to bargain with Congress on the debt ceiling, implying that if need be, he would use his executive powers under the 14th Amendment just to say that the debt is going to be extended and Congress doesn't get to have any say in that because the money has already been obligated. So how would I rank him? Somewhat improved relative to his complete weakness in the past, but I think the positions that he's taken in the past are going to do a ton of damage in the near future, that Obama is going to have to be an even tougher leader on behalf of progressive principles if he's going to undo the damage. Because 60 days from now, the Republicans get to jam him on the issue of the sequester in the way that he jammed them on the issue of whose taxes shall go up. So he's doing better than he had been, but I think he's done a lot of damage.
Well, Robert Kuttner, when you talk about the deficit hawks and the fix the debt corporate gang, particularly Pete Peterson, and you know, I remember interviewing Maya McGuinness about a year ago, and I'm always polite to people I talk to and call up because, after all, you're inviting people to have a discussion, not to have an argument. But I really had a difficult time with her because she simply wouldn't deal with reality. I kept saying, well, what's this bipartisanship you're talking about? Mitch McConnell vowed to make his number one priority to get rid of Obama. I mean, the notion of, one, that the sky is falling because of the debt, and two, that there's a bipartisan deal to be had, both of those seem to me to be the biggest canards of all.
Yeah, and you put your finger on the fact that the whole Peterson operation and all of the front groups that Peterson finances, beginning with Maya McGuinness's National Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget and Fix the Debt and Third Way and Concord Coalition and about eight other groups, all of these groups camouflage the fact that it's the Republicans who have been, you know, the complete extremists on this by, until this week, refusing to raise anybody's taxes and insisting on the kind of spending cuts that would be bad policy in their own right and would sink the economy in the face of a very severe deflationary recession. But because the corporate types who were underwritten by Peterson want to cut Social Security, want to cut Medicare, want to weaken government, they use deficit reduction as a kind of way of getting rid of these programs or cutting back these programs, and then they use all these front groups as a way of blaming both parties symmetrically, which is also wrong. So it's wrong in the politics, wrong in the economics, and Obama at least some of the time gives them aid and comfort. So now, having won the election, he is trying to be somewhat born again as a tougher leader, as a defender of Social Security and Medicare, as someone who is insisting that we raise taxes on the wealthy so that other people's taxes don't have to go up and so other programs don't have to be cut. But he still buys the snake oil of the proposition that the way to get a recovery going is to reduce the deficit. And that's just crazy. And because of the way this whole thing was structured in the 2011 budget deal, you know, the fiscal cliff has about four different elements. Now, we've just gotten rid of one of them. We're not going to have a tax increase automatically for everybody. We're just going to raise taxes on the top 1%. So on the one hand, that's progress. On the other hand, Obama's given up his strongest leverage against the Republicans, which was that if they didn't agree to tax the rich, everybody's taxes would go up. And now the Republicans are well positioned to turn the tables on him, because if he does nothing, the so-called sequester kicks in, and that's $120 billion of automatic cuts that was postponed 60 days, but the clock is ticking. And so he's going to have to bargain really tough and say to the Republicans, hey, look, if you want this sequester to kick in and have $60 billion a year of cuts in the military, you go right ahead and do it. But I am not going to throw any domestic spending cuts, much less Social Security and Medicare, into this pot. And that would require a much tougher Obama, both tactically and also ideologically, than we've seen in the past. And Obama would also have to say to them, I'm going to stand behind the 14th Amendment, and if you want to refuse to increase the debt ceiling, see you in court.
Again, I'm speaking with Robert Cutton, who's the co-founder and co-editor of The American Prospect. And his latest book is A Presidency in Peril, The Insider Story of Obama's Promise, Wall Street's Power, and the Struggle to Control Our Economic Future. And he also has an article at The American Prospect, The Endless Cliff. You listed all of the background to this phony crisis, if you will. But it is a phony crisis. It's been ginned up to make the middle class and the working Americans feel that somehow they have an obligation to solve a problem that is not of their making. The reason we're in trouble is because of what Wall Street did back in 2008, and that's the heart of all of our problems. Now, in terms of doing something about them, I'm a little concerned from what I'm reading about this deal. First of all, the inheritance taxes went up from 35 to 40%, which is not much for the first 5 million. The capital gains only went up to 20%, less than the 39.6% that would have prevailed without a deal. And then, of course, there's been no extension of the payroll tax cut, right? So. And what about carried interest? Are the Mitt Romneys of this world affected? Are they going to pony up a little more?
Well, as you say, that goes up to 20% from 15%. It's not nearly enough.
But they can carry their interest indefinitely. That's a part of the scam, isn't it?
A little more complicated than that. When they take the money as income, at that point, they pay at the capital gains rate, which is 20%. So as long as they don't cash it in, they don't have to pay on it. But when they do take it as income, they pay 20%. Used to be 15%. No, it's not a great deal. It's far from it. And I've been quite critical of Obama. I think he is moving in the right direction, but he's got a long way to go. And I think the Republicans have a lot of bargaining leverage. And as I say, the most constructive thing he could do would be to change his tune on the broadest issue of all, which is whether there needs to be deficit reduction at all, or whether we ought to be taxing the rich and then turning around and spending that money on public infrastructure and other social outlays as a way of getting the economy out of the recession. So, I called my piece The Endless Cliff because far from solving the problem, this was one little aspect. And the Republicans are just going to use all these little time bombs throughout the year to keep the pressure on Obama and the Democrats to cut spending, and they're going to have to be very tough to resist that. Now, the one good thing is that public opinion is not on the Republican side, not on whether to tax the rich, not on whether to cut Social Security and Medicare, not on same-sex marriage, not on gun control. You saw a kind of explosion today where several Republican leaders from states that had been hit by Hurricane Sandy were just outraged at the Republican leadership in Congress for failing to deliver on their promise to schedule an early vote on relief to the states that had so much flood damage. So public opinion is moving against the Republicans on issue after issue after issue. In that respect, Obama has the wind at his back, and again, it depends on whether he's going to follow public opinion or whether he's going to lead it.
Well, and also, the Republicans could be turning on themselves, isn't it? Public opinion may be turning against it, but they may be turning on themselves in the House.
That's right.
With 85 having voted for this package and 150 against it, assuming that the 150 that voted against it will vote for Eric Cantor to be the new Speaker, which is not unlikely, there's going to be a battle there, don't you think?
Well, it's certainly true that it has split the Republican Party down the middle between the ideologues on the one hand and the relative pragmatists, or at least the people who have to worry about getting elected. I mean, a lot of the Republicans have totally safe seats, right, and they don't really care what the rest of the country thinks. They get elected from very right-wing districts that have either been gerrymandered or just represent a part of the country that is right-wing. And so what they're doing is they're painting the Republicans into a corner nationally where they're more and more isolated from the majority of public opinion. So, yes, that's another very useful thing from Obama's point of view, is that it splits the Republican Party. And if you listen to right-wing talk radio and Fox over the last 24 hours, they're very, very upset with the Republicans who voted for this deal. And yet, if you look at the Senate, where, you know, you do have to get elected statewide, only five Republicans voted against this.
Sure. Well, Robert Kuttner, I thank you so
much. Satisfying.
Right. I thank you so much for joining us.
Sure. Happy to be with you. It's always a pleasure.
And Happy New Year to you.
And to you.
Again, I've been speaking with Robert Kuttner, who's the co-founder and co-editor of The American Prospect. He was formerly an assistant to the legendary I.F. Stone, a chief investigator for the Senate Banking Committee, and for 20 years wrote a column for Business Week. He's the author of 8 books, including A Presidency in Peril, The Insider Story of Obama's Promise, Wall Street's Power, and the Struggle to Control Our Economic Future. And he has an article at The American Prospect, The Endless Cliff. We're going to take a brief station break and be back further, talking further about the fiscal cliff deal.